Good morning. I'm going to call the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division to order. We do have a quorum, so thank you everyone who is able to make it here in this snow, another snowy day. We will adopt minutes now at the beginning of the meeting. We have two sets of minutes to adopt, so I'm going to turn to Representative Brand, February 5th.
Yes, February 5th, I would like to move adoption, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any corrections or additions? Any comments? No? All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes for February 5th, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion approved. That those are adopted for February 5th. Now, February 7th, Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, I move February 7th minutes as well.
All right. Any additions or corrections? Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion is adopted. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So thank you for doing that. And now we have a full agenda here today. We've got a couple of bills that we'll be hearing toward the end of the meeting, but we will be hearing from the department. We've got some, so again, budget packet in front of you. You have your three-ring binder, and we do have the handout is in your packet today, so you do have, it is available to you, the MDA overview, and at the end of today, you can either put it in your binder or you can put it in your save file because we are going to be referring back to this. So we do appreciate that we have the department. So if you come on down, Commissioner Peterson, we have Deputy Commissioner Bobel, and just as before we get started with that, just if there are Minnesota Farm Bureau Day on the Hill for chapters from northern Minnesota. So if people were able to drive down from the north today, we welcome you to be here. There might not be as many people that came up from the south today, and we might run into that with the testifiers as well. So welcome today to the committee. So, Commissioner, we're glad to have you back and to be able to talk about the MDA budget. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Tom Peterson. I'm the Commissioner of Agriculture. And I'm also pleased to be joined by Deputy Commissioner Bobel. And so as I get more and more up to speed on the budget, learning fast and pretty familiar with it going into it, but also helpful to have her here as well. And then also we also have Sherry Kromschroeder with us, our financial and budget director. And so and also Josh Stamper, who you'll be hearing from in a little bit after my presentation, and Assistant Commissioner Susan Stokes. So with that, we'll just jump right into it and go through it. So our first, our mission is really important. That's something that I look at and talk to Governor Walz about. It's pretty simple, but it really encompasses a lot of what we do, enhancing Minnesotans' quality of life and ensuring the integrity of our food supply, which is very important, the health of our environment, and the strength of our agriculture economy. And so we know that's been, heard the other day we're in the fifth year of a three-year downturn. So continuing to do what we can to honor that mission. Won't go through all the bullet points, but 450 employees at the Department of Agriculture. I think it's interesting, too, when I look to see, like, for example, a DNR, I think, has 10 times that number, or the Department of Corrections. So when you're looking or comparing at scope of employees or agencies, I think that's kind of just an interesting number to look at. We promote farm products, respond to diseases and pests are really important issues that threaten our agriculture and natural resources. Also inspect grocery stores, convenience stores, and the like, dairy farms, processing plants, feed mills, fertilizer plants. We have two main areas of responsibility. The primary state agency, we're, as I said, responsible for protecting the state's food supply and a key player in protecting the state's natural resources. We're primary agency responsible for supporting and promoting the state's industry and ag economy. You're going to hear from our division directors in these different categories as we go through the budget in the next couple of days, and appreciate you taking the attention to do that. We have the pesticide fertilizer management area, the agricultural marketing development, plant protection, dairy and meat inspection, food safety, and laboratory services. And so I think that's, you'll find it very interesting to visit with all of these division directors as I have, so continuing as we get into this. Minnesota's ag industry, I think it's always important stat, 73,200 farms, and the threshold for that, keep in mind, is $1,000 with a farm income. So some years, if I sell a couple of goats and a load of hay, you know, that qualifies. But we have a wide spectrum of farms in Minnesota, but that's counted in that 73,000. Generates $112 million in economic activity. You can see the breakouts there in the livestock and crop sector supports more than 430,000 jobs. I always think that's interesting, too, when we're talking about the ag budget for context. The ag budget is usually about a half or south of 1% of the state budget. So, you know, when you look at the number of jobs and the economic activity that we're moving in the state. And then always to say we're proud to be number one ranked in turkeys, sugar beets, and I always like green peas for processing. So number three in hogs. I thought we were number two in hogs, Representative Hamilton, but we'll continue to work on soybeans and spring wheat. So our base budget overview. So 2021, we have the big buckets that are kind of how we do our expenditures and looking at the different sections we have. We break it out into protection and promotion. So promoting agriculture, protecting everything we work on, and admin, 11% of our budget. You can see the buckets of money over there on the right. The big one, the ag advancement programs, that's going to have like the agri, agreet, things like that in that, in that section there. So you can see those expenditures. And that's for 2021, and those are the base funds. I added this slide. This is a 2018-2019, just for a little bit of comparison. And also just showing the expenditures by base fund, and knowing that 11% of our budget does come from federal funds and is an important piece to just look at. And then the clean water legacy piece to 11%. Just wanted to put this in here. We also highlighted over on the right were some of the things the legislature did in 18 and 19 for spending, and you can see some of the things that we say have no funding for 20 and 21. And so just to highlight a couple of them would be like the noxious weed invasive grant. So that's some of the money we've used to fight Palmer amaranth does not have base funding for 2021. Industrial hemp, another big piece as we move forward, does not have base funding. You can see some of the other things. Representative Anderson had the tractor rollover bar grants, and then down into the dedicated and clean water, some of the bigger issues there being the ag water quality certification program that you can see down there. And here's, again, just another slide of our 2021 base expenditures by fund. Our dedicated and agriculture fund. The agriculture fund are the fees that we collect. General fund, obviously know what that is, federal fund. Then we also have remediation funding where we do MRLA and Commissioner Superfund cleanup for ag chemicals and through the Department of Agriculture. So that's what that 3.9 is. Here's some of the base funding on some of the pass-throughs, which I think is kind of interesting. You'll hear more about those and see different bills on those. So if you look on the left-hand side, you'll see different pieces like animal claims, crop claims, be like wolf, elk, dairy programs, dairy profitability teams. Of course, the agri is the big piece there, the 28 million, the agri and agreet. And so those take big chunks of money on the pass-throughs there. Some of the other ones there, I thought the other interesting one, the surplus food grant, the farm to food shelf program also is a pretty big pass-through there. And then on the right-hand side, we have the appropriations for the agency and the breakdown and how that is spent in the different funds. So whether it's the meat inspection, meat processing, egg marketing, or lab services, you can see all the different pieces that we have there. And again, as you go through, each division director is going to be breaking these out more and what they do and how those break down for them. Oops. I did it. Okay. All right. And here is the budget overview for our agriculture fund. And so this is our base fund budget for our expenditures on the on the fees that we take in and how we spend those back out, or this is our expenditures from those funds. So you can see on the pesticide regulatory and waste pesticide, you can see the different programs that we have there. Seed inspection, let's see, I'm trying to look at commercial feed is another big piece there that rises to the top. And again, so and then that, you know, one other piece I just highlight down at the bottom too is administration for the Rural Finance Authority is a really important too piece, as we have all these great Rural Finance Authority programs, but the administration's always important. So that's kind of a quick keep hitting the wrong thing here. So that's kind of a quick snapshot for those, and we can take some questions on the budget before Josh takes over to go through the pesticide and fertilizer management.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, it may be a little bit early, but you know, we have a surplus coming around this time, and a lot of people have requested increased funding for things. I have myself. The governor's budget comes out soon. Any idea that you could share with us at this time about increases you're going to be looking at in your base budget funding, or what types of things would you be prioritizing and looking for some increased funding in our ag budget?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, again, not being able to talk in specifics, but really I think there's important categories that we've talked about. It's not a surprise. We're concerned about the economy. Trade in general is a concern. What we're going to do with our surplus of commodities. Farm stress is a top priority that we're pleased the committee has been looking at. pests and disease is also something I think that we need to be very cognizant of, and so we're trying to look at is our state ready to handle African swine flu or bovine tuberculosis. I think those are, you know, some of the things that really rise to the top. We're also continuing to look at our dairy situation, you know, in your area as well. And so those are some of the issues that we're looking at this time.
And Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. And I was looking at the mission, and you and I have had these conversations before. I just wonder if you could give your insight into the term regulatory capture. And who does the agency serve in your view? Is it Minnesotans, or is it the folks that come in contact with the department?
Commissioner.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, that's a good question. And, you know, I've seen the regulatory capture phrase. I think that Governor Walz talks a lot about servant leadership, and so how do we serve farmers as my as we're delivering inspections and fees and things that we're collecting from them is very important. And then are we delivering in a timely manner? Is what the value they're getting important? But also looking at are those programs serving the public and the greater good? As you look at our mission, I think that's something that, you know, we look at how we work among agencies, which I think is really important. And so I like what Governor Walz has been saying, is that we have a chance right now to reset some of our relationships. In agriculture, a lot of times some of our things in our budget, they work to leverage things in Bowser or the DNR. And so that's my goal, is to deliver things that are workable for farmers but provide results for Minnesotans.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to follow up, Commissioner, so the agency has a great deal of authority beyond just the actual farmer. Mm-hmm. So there are regulatory authority and grants that go to people who aren't farmers. And Emerald Ash Borer is one type of thing. So my concern, having been on here almost my whole time, is we always talk about the farmer, and I'm not even sure if we've had a commissioner go to the green industry convention. I would encourage you to do that, the lawn and landscape and the nursery folks. So could you maybe just elaborate on, because I think in common nomenclature, this is the agency for the farmers, but there, you have great power over many interests, and how do you see that in advocating for those?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, yeah, good question. You know, this week I met with, or was it this week, the Minnesota Landscape Association. We've been meeting with different folks to talk about Emerald Ash Borer. To be clear, that's not my strong suit as I went into this job, and so that's something that I've spent a lot of time on. My farm personally, I have two forests on it, and, you know, very concerned about that. I live in Pine County. I have a lot of my neighbors in the north. Those are top issues for me. I always said, too, when I was working for Farmers Union, that not to underestimate how many farmers own forest plots on their farms. And so trying to understand Emerald Ash Borer, Gypsy Moth, has been interesting to me. So I've been spending quite a bit of time with the assistants and trying to figure out what's the best path forward. I also understand, following your comments and committees before, is how do we best do that when the federal government is kind of walking away from it. And so I think that's issue that I can assure you that we are looking and trying to carry on forward on all those type of issues.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very quick. And finally, kind of on that same line of thinking, that the science is showing and becoming overwhelming on the impacts of agricultural chemicals and other chemicals on pollinators. And so we're actually seeing that in the urbanizing areas that species like the rusty patch bumblebee are surviving more in the urban areas. So the regulatory outlook in urban areas and suburban areas, as that relates different than in the agricultural areas, just on your perception on for both honeybees, which are an integral part of agriculture, but also native pollinators as well.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and Representative Hanson, again, glad to meet with different stakeholders on that issue, too. And I know you don't like the word stakeholders, but to me that's important. So it's the people that are raising, both bees and also have interest in pollinators, and as well as different farm groups, and then just being very familiar with the issue is look at how do we as an agency but also as an administration move forward on pollinators. And so you're familiar with the governor had a executive order, but previous Governor Dayton had, executive order. We had the pollinator working group through the EQB. And so we're looking at those as an administration first and foremost is how the governor wants to move forward with that. And I think we're not as, definitely something he's interested in. But as we work through a lot of like the budget items and things like that, we're trying to put together what are the, recognizing that we are, there's places where we can move forward or we can make some changes. And so we're looking at that as in the agency within the EQB and then within the governor's office itself. And so I've committed and make that commitment to you to continue to work on that.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I know, Commissioner, you'll be available, I think, throughout the meeting, so that if we have additional need to bring you up, we will do that. Thank you again for the presentation. And Mr. Stamper is going to continue on here with the pesticide and fertilizer management. Welcome to the committee. And just state your name and then go ahead with your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Joshua Stamper. I'm the Division Director for the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So Pesticide Fertilizer Management Division, short for PFMD. PFMD is the lead agency for pesticide and fertilizer regulation in Minnesota. We also have the responsibility, as Representative Hansen referred to, is for protection of groundwater from agricultural chemicals. We also have significant responsibility with emergency response and responding to spills and cleanups of agricultural chemicals. We also conduct collections of waste pesticide products extensively throughout the state. We have 77 of the counties that collect waste pesticides through the Household Hazardous Waste Collection Program, and to date we've collected over 7 million pounds of waste pesticides that provides users of agricultural chemicals an affordable way to dispose of waste products so that they do not end up in the environment. We're also responsible for the Minnesota Agricultural Water Quality Certification Program. I got an update last night. We have over 700 farms that have been certified through the Ag Water Quality Certification Program. I know that there are several farmers in the room that have been certified through that program. And to date, we're above 453,000 acres that have been certified for agricultural water quality. And we are continuing to grow this program. It's extremely popular, and it's had a lot of positive support over the last several years. Pesticide and fertilizer management is a group that works extensively with both the farm community, the regulated clientele, and interested and environmental parties. We try to work with everybody on the front end as much as possible so that whatever solutions, whether they're regulatory or educational, are as responsive as possible. We have about 120 employees. Many of these are soil scientists, hydrologists, or agronomists. A significant component of those staff live in outstate or greater Minnesota. Many of them come from the agricultural part of the world. Many of them have graduate degrees, and some of them are still actively engaged in their family's farm enterprises. Our budget for PFMD is about $30 million a year. Most of this comes directly from dedicated fees on the sales of agricultural chemicals and then also from Clean Water Fund dollars. Our regulatory activities, we'll pass these around, is really focused on the, is primarily funded through the registration of pesticides and fertilizers. As you can see on the table above, we register a lot of different agricultural chemicals. Some of the major ones are going to be like disinfectants and wood preservatives, but then there's also some specific agricultural, true ag chemicals that we would think of as being used on the farm that are used extensively. We have 631 active ingredients that we register and regulate, and in a normal year, we sell about 96 million pounds of agricultural chemicals. We're also responsible for applicator licensing. We issue about 30,000 applicator licenses to private applicators like farmers who want to use restricted use products, commercial and non-commercial applicators, and then also structural applicators. So if there is a reason for one of your constituents to interact with the agency, it's primarily going to be through our licensing mechanisms. We also respond each year to complaints about fertilizers and agricultural chemicals. I passed around some little pamphlets that kind of lay out some of the different processes for if you have a pesticide complaint, or if you know you're the subject of a pesticide complaint, what the timeline is, what you can expect to occur, and how that process moves forward. In a normal year, we get about 140 complaints. I call that a normal year. The last 2 years have not been normal as we've responded to a significant increase in complaints associated with the rollout of dicamba. We've really appreciated the work that the agricultural community has put into making sure that growers understand what they need to do to use these ag chemicals safely so that it does not impact their neighbors' farms and does not impact the agricultural community as a whole. We're also responsible for the inspections of facilities, and when we talk about facilities, largely we're talking about agricultural chemical dealerships, distributors, and a lot of these inspections are making sure that they have the appropriate infrastructure in place to provide safeguards for the use of these agricultural chemicals. We take the statutory responsibility that we have for protection of human health and the environment very safely. Each year we're cruising around across the state and visiting a lot of these ag chem facilities, conducting inspections to make sure that the appropriate safeguards are in place so that we can use these products safely and responsibly. We're also responsible for emergency response. So if there is, you know, a tender truck hauling dry product turns over and spills into a ditch, we work very closely with our first responder friends, and through that we have mechanisms through the duty officer, and then we're also responsible for the regulation of anhydrous ammonia. And we conduct about 100 anhydrous ammonia inspections each year. At the end of the day, our only goal and metric for success in much of this is making sure that we can use these products safely. And that's something that we spend an immense amount of time both working with a regulated clientele and the agricultural community to make sure that everybody has the knowledge and information and that the ground rules are clearly laid out so that they know what is compliance. Anytime we have an issue, you know, we encourage our regulated clientele that if you have a question about this, give us a call. Our inspectors will show up. We'll conduct a compliance assistance visit. It's not regulatory. Our goal is to get you in compliance so that if you're a regulated clientele, if you're agribusiness, so that you can appropriately serve the farm community that is your clientele. Our incident response activities are really focused on three kind of main categories. We do emergency site cleanup. So like I alluded to, if a tender truck tips over and spills fertilizer, we respond to that and help make sure that the cleanup meets our environmental goals. We also do long-term site cleanup. So if there's an ag chem facility, you know, and everybody acknowledges that a little bit gets spilled on the ground and over 30, 50 years, that can result in some long-term contamination of soil or groundwater. We have programs specifically that move to address some of those long-term site cleanups. And we also have voluntary site cleanups where someone may want to say, well, you know, the site's been abandoned, the city wants to move it. We have an interest in getting folks who may want to profit off of the sale. We have the voluntary program that gets them plugged in so that they can get a site cleaned up and then develop it for a further use. All of those three kind of cleanup categories can be eligible for the ACRA Bag Chem Response Reimbursement Account. And the ACRA account pays for 80% of the cleanup costs after the first $1,000 for eligible projects. We also have responsibility for Superfund, as Commissioner Peterson referred to it. We call it MRLA. It's defined in Minnesota Statute 115B. That is our Minnesota Environmental Response and Liability Act. So this is just real quickly. These are some photographs. You know, so a lot of times when we conduct cleanups, we do a lot of site borings to try to figure out the extent of contamination. And then subsequently, it's pretty simple in a lot of these areas. We're coming in and excavating out as much of the contaminated soil as we possibly can. And if we feel it can be safely land applied, we'll work to land apply it, which is usually the low-cost solution. If it's a particularly nasty product and we don't believe that it can be land applied, we will landfill it. And we do, there are significant costs associated with that because sometimes we have to put a lot of this material on a freight train or a truck and take it to special landfills that will receive it. For our non-point source programs, MDA is responsible for addressing non-point source impacts to groundwater from nitrate from fertilizer. We're also responsible for non-point source impacts to surface water and groundwater from pesticides. We work closely with some of our other sister agencies on fully understanding the health and environmental risks from pesticides, and then we're also responsible for our for water quality monitoring for pesticides and from nitrates. And so the map that you see right here is a map of all of our surface water, our streams and rivers monitoring locations throughout the state. You can see that we do have extensive urban and rural water quality monitoring so that we can quickly ascertain, you know, if there are temporal issues associated with ag chemicals showing up in our streams and rivers or lakes. As a function of that, we spend an extensive amount of time collecting water samples and then submitting those for analysis. Our fertilizer non-point issues, this is a lot of our educational programs. A lot of this is predicated off our nitrogen fertilizer management plan. Many of you have heard about the nitrogen fertilizer rule that's been extremely controversial in the last couple of years. The nitrogen fertilizer management plan is the actual roadmap for that. The rule is subsequently an outcome of that. One of the other things that the nitrogen fertilizer management plan also directs the agency to pursue is to work with the University of Minnesota to implement and develop best management practices. And this is the educational component that we often talk about. These BMPs are based off of the best available science. It's peer-reviewed. And we do know that these best management practices can have an impact on limiting the non-point source movement of agricultural chemicals. We also spend a lot of time developing, we also spend a lot of time developing tools for technical assistance for impaired waters. I'm passing around the Ag BMP handbook. This is a product or a tool that we developed about 6 years ago, and we recently did a re-up of this to come up with to be able to quantify the impacts of conservation practices on non-point source pollution within Minnesota. All of the data that's in this is specific to the North Central region. It is all peer-reviewed and what we would consider kind of white papers. And so we distribute these to water managers and some of our other friends that have a vested interest in non-point source pollution from agricultural chemicals. We also fund priority research where we have trying to understand the impacts of some of the agricultural practices. One of these that's been extremely popular is our NMI program, our nutrient management program. And so this is a program where we work with farmers, their crop advisors, to evaluate practices and to kind of test BMPs. And historically, this started out as a fertilizer program where we're just looking at, okay, well, can you reduce the rates of fertilizer, and then what will be the subsequent economic impacts? And a lot of this has been to test, you know, to verify on the ground that best management practices can be both economical and can be effective in limiting the amount of non-point source pollution. We're also responsible for the certification of soil and manure testing labs. And as a quick point of reference, we are the only state in the country that certifies manure labs. We developed that program a long time ago, and NRCS and USDA rely on our certification program as part of their federal programs. So we have been really involved in making sure that folks who are going to be land applying manure really understand what they're applying and that the laboratories have a uniform, consistent way of interpreting those results. Our pesticide non-point activities are really focused around the pesticide management plan for water resource protection. One of the primary outcomes of that is the development of water quality best management practices for the use of pesticides. We also work extensively with our sister agencies on pesticide issues. So if there's a, you know, if we do find some sort of legacy contamination in groundwater, we work very closely with health. If it's a surface water issue, we work closely with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and then we also work with the Department of Natural Resources on any concerns we may have in groundwater. We have a very long legacy of water monitoring. We've had a 25 years of long-term pesticide monitoring. We also conduct extensive edge-of-field and tile line monitoring. We also conduct all the monitoring activities for the Discovery Farms of Minnesota. And as you can see here, we have some pretty sophisticated infrastructure that goes into making sure that we can accurately quantify what is the non-point source load off of some of these agricultural fields, and then subsequently how do best management practices lessen those loads. We also conduct extensive monitoring in private wells for nitrate, nitrogen contamination, and groundwater. We coordinate with other monitoring programs. And each year we put out a water quality monitoring report. And if you have trouble sleeping, just curl up with that, because there's a lot of data in there, and it also references some of the long-term trends that we've seen in water quality monitoring. One of the things that we can talk about is from a water quality standpoint, we have some very real successes in how these best management practices and how these monitoring approaches have been effective in limiting non-point source pollution from agricultural chemicals. Real quickly, I'll take you guys through our budget. PFMD's budget falls into five primary buckets. We have our dedicated accounts, and this is the revenue that's generated from fees associated with the registration and sale of agricultural chemicals, whether they be pesticides or fertilizers, and soil and plant amendments. Then we also have clean water funds. We have our MRLA account. That's our long-term kind of site cleanup for Superfund. We have about 2% of our budget is general fund, and 1% comes as federal dollars. And those federal dollars are through a cooperative agreement with the Environmental Protection Agency at a federal level, where they do they work with the state lead agencies for pesticide regulation to essentially help us prioritize some of the things that they believe the state should be doing in response to investigations and cleanups. Just very quickly, when we look at this total budget, about 35% of this dollar value is passed through to various different stakeholder groups. So, you know, well, this seems like a big amount of number, 35% of it, you know, a little over $20 million is passed through dollars to, you know, state and local units of government, local units of government, and then also, you know, cooperators that we have, things like that. When we break down our dedicated accounts, A11 pesticide account is the single largest chunk within that. Then we also have the ACRA account, and remember, ACRA is the cleanup reimbursement program. So, you know, when an ag chem facility closes down and they want to, as the city may want to redevelop it, they can do the cleanup, and then they're eligible to apply for reimbursement to the ACRA board for reimbursement of 80% after the first $1,000, those cleanup dollars. Then we have our fertilizer accounts, our MRLA projects, and this is the actual Superfund costs that go into cleanup. Up at the top, there's a small sliver of MRLA administrative costs. And then we have our waste pesticide. That's almost all directly pass through to local units of government for the costs associated with the disposal of waste pesticides. General fund represents about 3% of our dedicated accounts, and then we also have our federal grants that represents another chunk of our dedicated accounts. And then lastly is our clean water fund. The largest component of that is the Ag Water Quality Certification Program at 26% of that budget. Then we also have our nitrate and groundwater account that's responsible for a lot of the monitoring that goes into our township testing programs and understanding, you know, how do we implement groundwater protection from nitrate contamination. We also pass through exclusively 100% of the Forever Green initiative dollars, and we also have a slice of the pie that goes into technical assistance. This technical assistance money is what funds things like the Nutrient Management Initiative that really helps growers see for themselves and, you know, see where the rubber meets the road on, you know, how these best management practices are economical and can help protect ground surface water. We also have monitoring well testing programs for specifically for pesticides. We have a significant chunk of research dollars, and these research dollars are almost exclusively passed through. We work with other agencies that are responsible for environmental protection and then subsequently develop priorities and then have a research RFP each year where we request proposals for environmental research. We also have a position for the irrigation water management position through the University of Minnesota Extension. In full disclosure, I previously occupied that position, so I appreciate all of y'all's support. There are also irrigators across the state that also genuinely appreciate the support for this. The irrigated community does represent a small percentage of the irrigated of the total ag acres in the state, but they represent a significant amount of volume of those acres, or value of those acres. We also do some pesticide monitoring that's not associated with homeowner well testing. And then we also have the Ag BMP program, which follows through. It's part of the Ag BMP loan program. So if growers want to pursue implementing an agricultural BMP, they can apply to this loan program and get low interest loans. We also have ag marketing crop markets that are funded through clean water, and then we also have a research database, which is a little bit more broad than the Ag BMP handbook that was passed around. That's more focused on what we would consider gray literature, things that may not necessarily be peer-reviewed, but represent value when we start quantifying, you know, how does agriculture protect the environment? And with that, I'd love to respond to any questions y'all may have.
Thank you, Mr. Stanford. Any questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stanford, one of the things, kind of a hot-button topic the past couple of years was the restrictions on spraying soybeans with dicamba. And fewer complaints this year. I think a lot fewer acres sprayed because of weather and the cutoff date. And we hear things about number of complaints, number of acres affected, but one thing I didn't see very often or at all was actual damages, reduced yield. Was that data collected, or how did you determine what exactly damage was to a soybean field?
We did not collect specific yield data, and specifically, namely because that is not necessarily in our charge. By statute, drift, non-point movement off-site of a pesticide applied is a violation of the law. You know, the economic impacts are not something that we delve into. We are simply there to, you know, find out, was the label followed? Was the law followed? So to step out of the regulatory role and talk about this, one of the things that we have to be cognizant of is in the regulation of agricultural chemicals, whether it's good, whether it's bad, how is it implemented? the one thing that I personally believe we need to do is to be very thoughtful about how do we both continue to have tools that help the agricultural community use crop protection products, but also use them safely so they do not affect their neighbors. You know, I've had, we've had complainants, you know, try to commit suicide. I mean, this has been pretty tough. And, you know, when we look at this from a regulatory perspective, you know, we want the farm community to, you know, have tools. We want them to have technology. We want them to be successful both economically and from a quality of life perspective. And sometimes that's an imperfect approach that we take to that. We'll be wrong. I'll do something today and I will be wrong. But we also have to take the view from the perspective of how do we get it right in the long term. And that's what we're really committed to.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up on a different topic. Could you give us kind of the layout or timeline on the nitrogen fertilizer management plan? I believe it's supposed to go into effect in next year, 2020. Is that all out there ready to go, or what's the status with that?
Mr. Stamper.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I would love to bring up my Assistant Commissioner Susan Stokes, who can give you all an update on that.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Commissioner, and go ahead and if you heard the question, so if you're available to answer it.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, the timeline is, as you know, the Minnesota Statute 14.126 delays the adoption of the rule until after the end of this legislative session. So assuming that that stays on course and happens according to schedule, then what will happen is the first part of the rule that goes into effect is 2020. That will be the fall restriction. That goes into effect January 2020, but as a practical matter, fall of 2020. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Stokes. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question kind of for Dakota County. About 20 years ago, the county was looking at water sampling, and there was a program called FANMAP where the agency jumped in and has done monitoring, and it's my understanding now we're having detections of cyanazine again in, I don't know if it's drinking water, but at least groundwater. And I don't think cyanazine has been used since I was at the department, so that's getting to be a long time ago. So when we look at these cleanup programs, whether they're ACRA or MRLA, if cyanazine is not being used for 15, 20 years, where's the cyanazine coming from? How do we, if we've cleaned up the dealer sites, and maybe if you could just elaborate on that.
Mr. Yes. Stamper.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, cyanazine is an agricultural chemical. It was a herbicide that was commonly known as Belatex. Cyanazine, I believe, has not been registered in the United States since the very early 2000s. It is still currently available for sale in Australia, I believe. But, you know, we're getting close to 20 years where it has not been used. Cyanazine represents an analytical chemistry challenge because cyanazine is, you know, we can buy it. We could send somebody to Australia and they'd come back with 2.5 gallon jug of it. The challenge that with cyanazine has been synthesizing the degradates, and the degradates are primarily what we're concerned with. Dakota County has worked through the USGS to conduct some specific monitoring on a handful of wells that they have known over a long period of time have had cyanazine detections. The challenge that we run into from an analytical chemistry standpoint is being able to synthesize those degradates so that when we look at it from an analytical standpoint, you know, using liquid and gas chromatography, we're looking for peaks. And if we don't have a standard to, you know, help us determine where to look for those peaks on the spectrum of light, we're going to have a very hard time doing that. Our information is that USGS has been using standards that are over 20 years old. We have invested significantly in the development or attempting to develop new standards. To date, we've spent almost $100,000 of pesticide regulatory account to try to develop those standards. We're still not positive that the labs who have bid on it are going to be able to develop those standards.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a follow-up to that, so around the same time the people of Minnesota invested in the new building where the Department of Ag and the Department of Health reside with the equipment at that time, which was state-of-the-art because we wanted to be able to respond to any incident where people may have wanted to do us harm with such chemicals and to have that rapid response. But as we know, time moves on. And so on your question of standards, cyanazine isn't being used anymore. Some of the old chemistry, like atrazine, still is being used, but we find the degradants there as well, which may actually be more difficult in terms of potential human health. So what do we do with the new chemistry? How quickly can you keep up with the new chemistry and having the standards so you can do the analytical work? For example, if it's a variety of chlorpyrimid or some of the other
chlorpyrifos.
Not chlorpyrifos, but the neonicotinoids that are newer chemistry.
Chlorpyrimid.
So those, how do you have the standards where you can do the analysis to test for water or for food content if those newer chemicals are coming along?
Mr. Stamper.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen. Method development is something that our laboratory is excellent at. So when it comes to the methods to develop these new chemicals, our laboratory is world class, and I make no qualms about that statement. The challenge that comes along with that is when you have very cutting edge analytical capacity, you also have issues that are associated with how quickly you turn things around. We've had several legislative requests to update the lab so that we continue to have the capacity to respond to this. But we get into significant backlogs when it comes to a lot of our analytical work. These laboratories are doing stuff that we're measuring things on orders of magnitude lower than we've ever been able to measure even 10 years ago. And so the challenge with that is, okay, we can find stuff, but how quickly can we do it and under what resources to turn those around? So from a method development, we're not nearly as concerned about that as when we run into some of these old legacy products where no one uses it, and so they've kind of just got mothballed to the side, and we're now trying to say, well, how do we really fully understand this?
Yes, Representative Hansen.
And then finally, Madam Chair, so is there a need for ongoing hardware acquisition in your lab to keep up with the new chemistry? We know that as we find smaller detection levels on the health side, we find that there's limits or there's impacts of those smaller and smaller levels. So not just can you find it, but the whole scientific world continues to look as what does that mean? And then for policymakers, what do we mean? What do we direct you to do to try to stay ahead of that? And I think Minnesotans want to know what's in their water, whether it's new chemistry or old chemistry, or what's in their food, whether it's new chemistry or old chemistry.
Mr. Stamper.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, one of the things that we do rely extensively on is the role that the Environmental Protection Agency plays in developing some of the safe use criteria for different classes of agricultural chemicals, and we rely on that extensively. We also rely on our sister agencies like the Department of Health to provide us with information about, for specifically drinking water standards, and whether they're health and safety standards. And these standards, have a hundredfold level of safety built into them. And so when we look at those standards, we feel pretty strongly about those standards and the monitoring that goes into that.
All right. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Stamper, in 2018, what were the number of reports or complaints received by the department regarding bee colony loss and number of claims paid out?
Mr. Stamper?
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, we had two BKIL compensation claims in 2018.
Representative Hamilton.
And Madam Chair and Ms. Stamper, do you have the dollar amount that was paid out on those claims?
Mr. Stamper?
Madam Chair, and Representative Hamilton, I do not know that right off the top of my head, but we can get that to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Clevon.
I just have a simple question, Madam Chair. So when we're looking at methods of manufacturing of pesticides going forward, is the state looking more carefully at pesticides and their movement in the soil? This is an old class of chemistry that we were talking about earlier that moved more in the soil. But are the new pesticides being put out, do they have less movement in the soil?
Mr. Stamper.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Clevon.
Clevon. One of the things that you will see now is that when we talk about the pipeline of implementing new classes of agricultural chemicals, that pipeline is largely a drip. We have not seen a lot of new chemistry over the last 10 years. And namely, some of the issues that are associated with that is the regulatory process that the EPA requires registrants to go through to register, you know, a new active ingredient or new class of chemicals. It is the requirements to bring forward a new active ingredient or a new active ingredient are really significant. It takes many, many years of research and development, and the onus is placed on the registrant to demonstrate to the EPA that the product is not going to be persistent in the environment, is not necessarily going to be mobile to a point where we have significant concerns. And so, as you know, as a function of that, I guess we spend less time thinking about the new stuff coming because, quite frankly, we haven't seen a lot of the new stuff coming. I mean, the biggest, baddest, you know, newest technological tool was dicamba, which has been around for 60 years. You know, if that wasn't the case, I think we wouldn't see thing. You know, we wouldn't see technological advances like dicamba. Dicamba is an excellent tool. It's effective. But we just need to make sure that we have the appropriate, when we're using it in new ways, we fully understand, you know, how to limit off-site movement.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Stamper and Assistant Commissioner Stokes. Appreciate the presentation. And we are going to move now, just again, an FYI, this is the packet of material that we'll be referring to again later this week. So if you want to, you can put it in your save file. In your folder, or else put it in your book, one of those places, then you would have it for reference for Thursday. But now we're going to go to bills, and Representative Anderson will be able to present. He has two bills before us, and the first one we're going to hear is House File 47. And so, Mr. Anderson, Representative Anderson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move House File 47 and have it be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. So we've got the bill before us, and if you want to go ahead, I believe you have some test fires, but you can also just go ahead with your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of my testifiers came from a ways out today. It was questionable if he was going to get here or not, but he made it, so we'll allow them time to have their testimony heard by the committee. This House file was around last year as well. It was part of the bill that was vetoed. A little bit more urgency this year because the checkoff dollars would end in 2019 if this bill is not extended. And then the entire AFRAC apparatus, the committee and their method of funding it would expire next year in 2020. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to call up a couple of testifiers to explain more fully what the bill does. It extends the AFRAC program for another 10 years, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. So, and again, materials are in the packet, so people do, you do have the bill, and it does extend it for 10 years. And there's some additional information here. But welcome to the committee, and I will ask that you, I don't know who wants to begin, but just give your name and provide your testimony. Welcome.
Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Grant Anderson, family farm operation, Belgrade, Minnesota, out in Stearns County. I made the drive down here this morning. Give you a little bit of information about myself. I come from I'm the fifth generation to operate our family farm. I farm with my two brothers, an uncle and father, so all five of us farm together. Our farming operation consists of a livestock, a 2,500 sow farrow to finish hog operation, beef a feedlot. We finish about 2,000 head of cattle a year, and have about 6,500 irrigated cropping acres of corn, sugar beets, kidney beans, soybeans, as well as some dry hay. I represent the Irrigators Association. I'm on the board of directors there, and that got me the seat on AFRAC, on the Fertilizer Council. Little information on AFRAC, as you have the packet in front of you. The AFRAC stands for the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council. It's a 12-person council made up of 11 different commodity groups. I think it's well represented. It represents a diverse cross-section of agriculture across Minnesota. AFRAC ensures that Minnesota farmers and ag dealerships get the best technical resources and recommendations, scientific advancements possible related to soil fertility issues. For those of you who don't know, that in 2009, Minnesota became the 12th state to have soil fertility checkoff, if you will. Other states up and down the Corn Belt, Minnesota, Missouri, Iowa, Wisconsin, California, even Oregon, have similar type checkoffs for fertility, directly fertility research. AFRAC provides long-term funding, leveraging coordination across organizations and other industry, academics, and state government. The mission is to improve fertilizer efficiency, profitability, and Minnesota's agricultural environment. To take a quick look back, in 05 and 06, Ag Nutrient Task Force was formed, and this was kind of put together to provide recommendations in the need of funding for additional soil research where university was falling short. 2008, the AFRAC Council was officially established, and in 2009, the legislature established the long-term funding mechanism, and that would be a 40 cent per ton of fertilizer that each farmer purchases fee. One major change to that, in the 2014-2015 session, there was a removal of a $800,000 cap, annual cap, of fees that were collected. So the current collections range from $1.1 to $1.2 million each year. And those are collected from the ag retailers, brought through the Department of Ag and administered to the AFRAC Council. Since its conception, AFRAC has funded nearly $8 million of soil fertility research. AFRAC and MDA have issued annual request for proposal. We've done 11 of those and have generated grant applications of over $25 million. So $25 million of grant applications or requests for proposal and only $8 million to divvy out. We have more research come at us that we could fund. We don't have enough dollars to fund all of the proposals. So a lot of good funds come to the council, good proposals come to the council that we don't have enough dollars to fund. To date, MDA has managed over 150 individual awards. Most are a partnership with, by nature, the University of Minnesota, but we also have funded several projects putting funding directly into industry where we see fit. A couple of examples I'll give on projects and why the AFRAC Council has provided value to the farmer like myself out in greater Minnesota. One of those would be the changing environment in terms of regulatory environment. We talked about the groundwater management rule and the dependency of less anhydrous ammonia, especially fall applied anhydrous ammonia. Last year, the AFRAC Council funded a project relating to different nitrogen sources, such as split and side dress applications. You've heard of the Y drop technology, where we're applying nitrogen, spoon feeding the nitrogen to the standing corn crop, even tasseled corn. So, just one example. Another one is the use of sulfur in Minnesota. Sulfur is a fertilizer used to come down with the rainfall, and we got it for free. About 5 or 6 years ago on my farm, we hadn't applied any sulfur to our corn crop. And we started to realize, and AFRAC had done some research, funded some research on it, that our corn was in need of supplemental sulfur, I should say. So that year we made the change on our farm, and it created a 10-bushel yield response. So it was a drastic yield improvement, something that the AFRAC funds helped to fund that research. So you have in your packets with you letters of support from all of our ag commodity groups, which are represented on the council. I'll tell you that the council's support is very strong. Everybody believes that the dollars are well spent and spent efficiently. The sales and the people at the department, Josh and others, would have much more specifics to this information, but there's roughly 2.8 million tons of fertilizer sold in the state of Minnesota. Average, so if you work that out, average revenue would be about $1.1 million. And that's the last few years, that's about the dollars that the AFRAC Council has had to allocate. And just a little bit more to vet myself, I come from a long line of frugal, as Representative Paul Anderson will attest, frugal Norwegian farmers out in greater Minnesota. And I don't like tax any more than anyone else. Very fiscally conservative, but I will tell you that these dollars are well spent and well allocated. The 40 cents per ton on my farm, commercial size farm, like I said, 6,000 irrigated acres, comes to about $600 out of our farm's pocket. That equates to less than 10 cents per acre. I think I more than get that value back out of the research that's funded by the AFRAC Council. And if this bill is not put forth and passed, this AFRAC Council will cease to exist. And I think it'll create a dramatic hole in ag fertility research across the state that the University of Minnesota just doesn't have the dollars to sponsor a lot of these projects. So with that, are any questions?
Or thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thank you. I do have a question. Representative Wozniak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. Anderson or Representative Anderson, if you could speak to kind of what sort of outcomes, I guess I'm interested to know, kind of has the research that you've been doing been replicated other places? I guess I'm just looking for some sort of what sort of impact has this research had on the state in terms of economics or a kind of ability to take this research somewhere else.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair and Representative. One example, I think, of how farmers are advancing their judicious use of fertilizer. There used to be an old rule that when you plan for a corn yield, for example, you would figure on 1.1, 1.2 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of corn. Now, with techniques, as Mr. Anderson alluded to, with the spoon feeding and wide drop of nitrogen, they're getting that down to 0.6, 0.7 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of yield of corn. So that's an example with real numbers of the improvements made in the use of fertilizer.
Representative Wozniak.
Just a quick follow-up. Do we have that information somewhere? Is there some sort of, I don't know if AFRAC itself has any sort of that information, like when you do these projects, that you have the information somewhere? So if we wanted to see sort of the results of some of this research, we could look at some of that.
And we're going to welcome to the committee. State your name, and then you'll be able to answer the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bond, Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. We represent the folks that provide the fertilizer, pesticides, and seeds to growers across the state, and also the certified crop advisors who advise growers as to their use of crop inputs. And related to that question, the AFRAC has a very extensive publishing on their website, and the Department of Agriculture actually has some very helpful information that they could forward to as well.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, I think it's also important to note that a lot of the research that the AFRAC Council sponsors and funds is University of Minnesota research, and it is used in the University of Minnesota's extension bulletins and those things that's put out to the farm. So a lot of it is funneled through the university and often has the university's name or trademark on it, but you'll see in the tagline that AFRAC sponsored a lot of those research projects.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question about the inspection fee. So the person who registers and distributes a specialty fertilizer, soil amendment, or plant amendment, so is that all fertilizer then? Is it urban and suburban uses as well? Are those folks having to pay a fee?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, to my understanding, it's an agricultural fee. I could be corrected by the department if there's more precise answer to give.
I believe it is all.
Okay. It is all. I'm corrected. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
So, yes, Representative Hansen.
So of 10 years of work, could you tell me how much has been paid by non-agricultural fertilizer and how much research has been spent on non-agricultural fertilizer?
I don't know if Mr. Bond has an answer or Representative Anderson or if there's any assistance from the department. But Mr. Bond.
Madam Chair, I would defer to the department. They'd have a more precise answer for that.
Is there someone available? Mr. Stamper, do you want to welcome again to the committee? And just state your name, if you would, please.
Madam Chair, Josh Stamper, Division Director for Pest and Fertilizer Management. And Representative Hansen, to your question, I was incorrect just now. It is non-bagged fertilizer, so it is bulk fertilizer. If it goes into like a 55-pound sack, it is not. That money does not go into the AFRIC account. So it's bulk fertilizer.
Thank you, Mr. Stamper. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But there are some non-ag uses that are bulked, I believe.
Mr. Stamper?
Absolutely.
And so that, and I know it's off the top of your head, so I would encourage maybe to see that data later of what that percent is or what the amount is of the fee that's paid by non-agricultural sources. And then the same question, either a percent or amount that's gone out towards non-agricultural research. I understand the difference between bags and the very small bags, but if there's bulk. And kind of the larger question here, Chair Poppe and members of the committee, is we've seen a lot of changes in the 10 years in terms of the how product is delivered. I just received a letter from my co-op talking about closing down or even tearing down some of the wooden elevators and moving towards more regional distribution, and at the same time some farms, as they get larger, hire their own employees, and there's that direct market from the semi rather than going through the dealer. So the dealer numbers are dropping, the large farmers may be increasing, and then the normal distribution mechanism, normal as it was 10 years ago, is not the same. And I think that puts the challenge on the question of how do you actually get the information if the dealers are not, if there are fewer dealers and you have fewer employees, how do you get to the larger farms that may have employees to incorporate the data? Because the delivery mechanism from the agency or the extension service doesn't exist like it used to. How do you get that information to places? And I'll just say, I would feel completely comfortable extending it for 10 years if you just added water quality into the reason of the research that you were doing, rather than just production, that if water quality was a component, because that ties into this production and water quality. And so solely having it after 10 years, I think the public purpose would be better if it had water quality and try to figure out how do we get information to producers or the dealers wherever they are, because it keeps changing. I think Representative Hamilton sees that the delivery mechanism is changing, and how do we make sure we're getting high quality information to people and to have that water quality component.
All right. I don't know if there's a that was a comment and a suggestion, and I don't know if there's a response. Otherwise, Representative Anderson, if you had a response. Thank you, Mr. Stamper. Or comment about that.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, certainly like to visit offline with you. Yeah, I think it's actually implied that a lot of this research, the bottom line is finding out what happens when you over-apply, under-apply, affecting yields and coming up with that economic sweet spot where the yields stay status and we do not impact water quality, but certainly
let's visit and feel more comfortable adding that, I certainly would be okay with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Did we have, yes, Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a new member to the committee, so please accept this question with that in mind. As I'm looking at the expenditures and where the money is going for the program, I'm curious as to why there is a council and that the money is just not going on to the University of Minnesota to do the extension work and research.
Madam Chair, Representative, to directly answer your question, there's some history here, and I think some of you remember Representative Al Junkie, who was concerned that there wasn't enough fertility research going on. And, of course, the university was coming to the table saying, we really have been slighted in our specific funding as well. So during the time that this was set up, that was the history that was going on. The interest that Representative Al Junkie had, I think, in the history of this bill is that the stakeholders were going to fund this through essentially agreeing to a contribution at that point. It was going to be a voluntary contribution through a tax, a tonnage fee payment. It became ultimately just a fee collected on all of industry. The industry, and by industry I mean the agricultural industry, primarily farms and farmers and those of us that support it. So on that basis, the majority, in fact, I would say a vast majority of the funding does go to the University of Minnesota, but it gets sifted through the needs of those groups that are already doing research and looking at what additional research can be done. And probably the strength of this organization is bringing it together so that everybody's talking about the research that is falling through the cracks that still needed to be done. So this is, I think, looking at all avenues of delivery of research, the university being the primary source for that, but going beyond that. An example being on-farm research. Recently, you may remember when I first addressed this committee, we talked about precision agriculture. And what is interesting is that there are the applicators and the folks that provide the floaters and the application of fertilizers to the soil have such precise technology that they're able to actually do research that is valid and reliable, and that is another avenue of research that's going on, not exclusive of the University of Minnesota, but in coordination with them. So it's actually broadening the idea that each individual farm can do their own fertility research, testing their own judgments, their own soils, and coming up with a better, more efficient, and effective application that will, in fact, protect the environment and increase their productivity.
Representative Cleburne.
One more follow-up question, please. Then could you please help me understand, is all of the data public? Who owns that data? Is the data shared in a way that everyone can reap the benefit from it?
Mr. Bott.
Madam Chair, absolutely, it is all public data and all available and is readily available. We, in fact, for those of you that might be interested, on February 19th in St. Cloud is another fertilizer nutrient symposium. There will be hundreds of growers and folks attending that, and in part it's funded by AFRAC, and it will be featuring some of the AFRAC research. So, yeah, we want it to get to be as available as readily as available.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. We don't have any amendments today. There's been some suggestions, and you may be wanting to speak with Representative Hansen if there's something that in the future to make any changes to your bill. But at this point, this is the bill, and it extends by 10 years the so it continues the inspection fee and would do that. And I don't know if there's any other – do you have any other testifiers or if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to testify in support or in opposition? Otherwise, I think we'll just have you renew your motion. Oh, did we have another question? No.
I was just
okay. Okay, thank you. All right. So Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And again, thanks to Mr. Anderson, who is not a relative, by the way. He's just a neighbor, for coming down this morning, left early. I said you won't believe the traffic down here if there's a storm. So, again, thank you much for coming and adding good testimony about this bill. So, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that the House File 47 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you. The motion is before us. And all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Yes.
The motion prevails, and House File 47 is recommended to be referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Anderson, for coming the distance. That was wonderful for you to be able to come. And
thank you.
And now we have Representative Anderson with a second bill. And so, Representative Anderson, this is a policy bill that came to us from the floor, and we'll go back to the floor. There's no fiscal note attached to it. And Representative Anderson, if you would please move your bill and then proceed.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 270 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Thank you. So, Representative Anderson, if you would go ahead and present your bill, please.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. This is a very simple bill, and one that I think speaks to common sense. It was brought to us by a dairy farmer up in the north of the cities here, and it refers to a program that has been a good program, a methane digester loan program. And I don't know why, but statute says that if you utilize this program once, you're not eligible to use it again. And what the bill does simply is says that if you utilize the program, pay off your loan. And in this case, the farmer wants to expand the methane digester, enlarge it to utilize more methane from a larger cow herd, that he'd be eligible to go back and to apply for another loan under that same program, the methane digester loan program. It's a revolving loan program on the BMP side, administered by the Department of Ag, and also working with the Rural Finance Authority. So that's the bill, Madam Chair. It can be either a loan with the RFA or funded by a bank. The interest rate is zero, so you can't beat that. But it's not a grant. It's an actual loan which has to be paid back. And to me, if a farm expands, for example, and could utilize a larger system to capture more of the methane gas and to produce electricity, we should allow them to do that and take advantage of this program to expand that methane digester.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Wozlowak.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a quick question. I guess I'm not clear how this loan program works. So is I know it's a revolving loan program. I'm wondering if demand for the program is really high and that someone who wants a second loan may get a second loan before someone got a first loan. I don't know if you know enough about the program to kind of talk more about that.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I talked this morning with staff. Maybe Ms. Place, if she's here, could stop on down. Or the assistant commissioner. It's not utilized real often. They assured me that there are sufficient funds there to allow this to happen, but we may want to hear from the department.
Deputy Commissioner Valpo, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Representative. It's not utilized that often, so we have plenty of funds to cover that. And if I understand, the farm did pay back their first loan, so we shouldn't have any issues with that.
Thank you. And then we have another question, Representative Cleavon.
Yes, because it's a zero interest loan, my question is, are these individual sole proprietorships that are, because the word entity is in here, you know, I don't mind helping a farmer by giving them a low interest loan for this type of thing that would be good for the environment, but I'm not sure that we need to give zero interest loans to major corporate entities. So could you please help me understand the nature of the word entity?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, that's a good question. Entity is what it says. We don't put any stipulation on it. In this case, the farm that wanted to expand, they milked 425 cows. So I wouldn't say they're a huge multi-thousand cow operation. They are expanding. But I think it would be hard to tailor this to say that if you milk X number of cows that you're not eligible. It's not used that often. So I don't think it would be overused by corporate America, for example. A methane digester is with some of the costs of electric generation coming down, it's difficult to make them cash flow. When they have to renew again, get another power purchase agreement. I've heard of one, in fact, that ceased operating because they just couldn't make it work. So if we can help encourage that and to keep this methane gas from getting up into the atmosphere, I think that's a good thing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify in support or in opposition to this bill, House File 270? Otherwise, I don't see anything. Any closing comments, Representative Anderson?
No, Madam Chair. I think we've pretty much talked this one over, and we're going to finish on time today, so that's good. So with that, yes. Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 270 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. The motion is before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 270 is on the way to the general register. So just before we adjourn, we have concluded today's agenda. We will be meeting again on Thursday, and just a reminder, Friday morning, if you're interested, to be able to go and view the MDA lab. So thank you, and we will see you soon. Meeting adjourned.